Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back at 7:07 on WCCO Radio. Good morning. I'm Laura Oakes. We're heading for a high of 90 today. Hot, sunny day. It's going to be like this, even hotter over the next 5-6 days or so. So make sure you're taking precautions and also make sure you're having fun, taking advantage of the height of summer here in beautiful Minnesota in the summertime. I was just in the kitchen. It's 7 o'clock. This is kind of when I like to eat my breakfast. And I brought my breakfast. It was in the fridge. I'll tell you what it is. It's Greek yogurt mixed with steel-cut oats, chia seeds, blueberries, and walnuts. Very healthy, full of antioxidants, gives me energy. It's a great breakfast. I have it every morning, and I prepare it the night before. Oh, I also throw a little milk in there because when I make it the night before, by the morning, the chia seeds have soaked up all the milk, so it's just kind of like this, like a chia pudding kind of, with yogurt, fruit, nuts, healthy stuff, oats. And I went to, looking forward to eating my little breakfast this morning, and I got it out of the fridge while Al was doing the news, and I went to grab a spoon, and there's no spoons. And this is not really the kind of breakfast you can try to eat with a plastic fork or a knife, and that's all we seem to have in the kitchen. So I remembered at the very last minute, I brought a spoon from home a long time ago, and it's up in my little hiding spot just for these occasions. Yes. So here I am with my metal spoon, not a plastic spoon, that I hide away in the kitchen just for times like this. So good for me. It's a good start of the day. 7:09 on CCO. It is time for Car Care with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Good morning, Nick. How's it going?
Good morning. My breakfast isn't nearly as exciting as yours.
What are you having?
A glass of orange juice.
Well, you need more than that, my friend.
We'll see. We'll see when the kids wake up what they want. But for okay. Now, probably OJ followed some coffee and we'll see.
Yes. Now, is your household one where maybe on a weekend, mom or dad might make pancakes or eggs or something a little more than the usual during the week?
I enjoy doing that. It's just I need to get the teenagers to wake up to eat it. So if I can get them up before noon, maybe we'll do that. But we'll see what the day holds.
Well, teenagers need their sleep, as you know. So let them sleep. Those body clocks are going bonkers when they're teens.
Well, mom and dad need peace and quiet, too, so
exactly.
It's nice when you have your weekend mornings to ourselves.
Yes, and you have that beautiful setting in the woods. You can just sit on your deck and look at the trees and listen to the birds and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Good. All right, so I don't really have anything on the agenda today, Nick, and maybe there's something that you wanted to bring up, but listeners, if you have a car question for Nick Stoffel, please call us or text us. That's what he's here for. We have him for about 30 minutes. And the number is 651-461-9226. Nick, I can hear those birds right now. I love it, and I can picture it. So what's on your agenda? What should people be thinking about at this point in the summer?
Well, looking at the forecast, one thing I'll say, common things that we hear, people call about, people stop by, that they think the car has a leak. And what it is, it's the condensation from us running the air conditioning, having a steady drip on the passenger side near the front wheel on the passenger side is normal. Because when you're running the air conditioning, what it's doing is pulling the moisture out of the air inside the vehicle. And that moisture has to go somewhere. There's a drain. And that drain lets it exit the vehicle onto the ground, like I said, by the passenger front right tire. Now, people will also come and say, my passenger floor is wet. What's going on here? Well, a lot of times those drains are part of the heating and cooling HVAC system, and that box can also collect some debris over years of use and time and age, and sometimes that debris can create a plug in that drain, so that box will fill with water up to a seam where it can leak out and leaks into the passenger side of the vehicle. Typically not a huge repair, but you do need to have that dealt with, because the last thing you want is a wet carpeting, wet insulation, which can create mold. So this next week, you're running your air conditioning, you're noticing that it's not dripping on the ground, you notice that there's some wetness on the floor on the passenger side, typically bring that in, have somebody clear that drain, and then get the shop vac and vacuum that out. Because like I said, the last thing you want is have mold and other contaminants inside the vehicle.
Right. So one of the things I was reading about, like you mentioned, now is a good time also to test the AC. If the AC isn't keeping up, it might need a recharge or a new cabin air filter. Do you see a lot of that this time of year?
Well, in the cabin air filter, which is part of our regular maintenance, if that's neglected, that will get filled with stuff, cottonwood, stuff from the air, just filth, right? No different than your furnace at home. You know, as the fan's running through the air, it's cleaning that air. Well, if the cabin filter is not replaced on a regular basis, it can become restricted, preventing the air to flow. So you won't have very good air flow, whether it's a summer or winter with heat or air conditioning. And then, as you mentioned, the refrigerant recharge. Now, by design, the air conditioning system is sealed, like your refrigerator. You plug it in and you let it go. It runs cold forever. The difference is your refrigerator is stationary inside your kitchen where your air conditioning's attached to a moving vehicle outside. So over time, bumps and bruises and such a lot of times we can have a weakness, say a fatigued, an O-ring, a component that could fail to the point where it starts to leak a little bit. Now, when that happens, we lose the recharge of the refrigerant, and then therefore the system doesn't work. It cycles faster. It works for a moment, then it stops. A lot of inconsistent operation. Those situations, what we'd like to do is perform a series of tests, and what we're really trying to do is evacuate the system, determine the level of refrigerant that was in there. It's a gas. So it's not a dipstick. You can't measure it by looking at it. You have to, you know, evacuate it, measure it by weight, recharge it with the correct amount. And the trick here is that we add a little bit of dye, a little tracer dye. So in the event that there is a leak, we can run the system, let that leak work its way around, find that dye, and then you can pinpoint the source of the leak.
Wow. That's a lot going on there. I never realized you guys just dig in as deeply as you do to these situations.
Well, and the hard part is, you know, do-it-yourselfers are great. People that take the time to understand how things work. The thing that frustrates me is that people just assume or just have the quick response where, you know, if you go to a store and you buy one of those cans of that refrigerant with the sealant in it, my opinion, which is all this is that's a horrible idea. Couple reasons is it's a set amount of refrigerant with like a 12-ounce can, we'll say, and you don't know the level that's in your vehicle or the amount to get it to the correct level. And so if you overcharge it or undercharge it, it creates a whole different series of problems. So without removing what's in there, weighing it, and refilling it with the proper amount, you're not going to get proper operation. The second point on that, those sealants can be extremely dangerous in the sense that a lot of these areas are very tight spaces. You know, when that refrigerant's running through the condenser or the evaporator, and that's where we get in the hot and the cold happening, it can plug up those ports or those little passages, restricting flow, which means we restrict the amount that it will work or how well it will work. So I understand a lot of times they don't have the means to go out and do it all at once, but to at least stop, have the professionals take a look, tell you exactly what's going on, give you sound advice, then you have an educated decision to make.
And don't buy the canned refrigerant. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. You know, I know they sell a lot of it. People do it. But I would tell you that they find out that that didn't work like it was supposed to. Now I have a bigger repair than I intended on. That's frustrating. I wish somebody would have told me that beforehand, is what we usually hear. So that's my two cents. You know, everybody's got their own opinion, and they have that right. But I just hate to see people waste money when there's an easier path.
All righty. You are listening to Car Care with Nick Stoppel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. If you have a question for Nick, give us a text or give us a call, even better, 651-461-9226. It is 716 on CCO. We'll be back in a moment. I love those liners, but I can't stand that one. Who wants to think about gas station sushi turning on you at 7:20 in the morning on a Saturday? Not me. I get it, though.
Yeah.
We love our voice.
Who's going to eat sushi from a gas station, huh?
Yeah. In the first place, who's doing that? Don't do it. We are joined by Nick Stoppel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. We're taking your car care questions either by text or by phone. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call or text is 651-461-9226. 9226. Couple of texters on the line, Nick. The first one says, how important is it to have wheel bearings repacked in an old vehicle?
Well, you don't hear that very often. It kind of goes hand in hand with like a utility trailer. And here's what the difference is. On automobiles here, I don't know, a dozen, 20 years ago-ish, we'll call it, they started to make a sealed assembly wheel bearing, meaning that it didn't require maintenance. It was designed and built to last the life of the vehicle. Unfortunately, we have potholes in Minnesota, so those can be kind of hard on wear and tear on those wheel bearings. But to answer their question is, on a vintage vehicle, or I mentioned it, it's certain utility trailers, you have to remove the wheel, take the hub apart, and the wheel bearings you actually take and pack new grease. And there's a little tool that you can use that'll squeeze and force grease through that bearing to get the old grease out, good fresh bearing grease into that. And then you kind of have to reassemble, like the sandwich we'll call it, because the wheel bearings kind of sandwich around the hub. Then we place the washer and the nut and kind of preload to get the right tension on it. It's something we don't see very much, if at all, to be honest, anymore, because, you know, vehicles in these last, you know, couple decades haven't been equipped or designed as such. And frequency, you know, a vintage vehicle, I suppose it depends on how much it's being driven, the condition. Usually when we service those vehicles, or when we used to service those vehicles, we do what we call like a shakedown, meaning we're checking for loose steering and suspension components, including the wheel bearings. If we notice excessive free play in those, we might recommend taking that apart, doing as I described with new grease and reassembling and snugging things up. It's also a good time to get a visual inspection of the condition of those bearings. Like I mentioned, they're going down the road with us. Every bump and pothole that we hit, that wheel bearing's also feeling that. So that can cause wear, a little nick or burr in one of those bearings can cause excessive wear and a potential failure. So I would say, I can't remember that. I want to say it used to be like 30,000 miles, but that seems almost like it was too long. If it's a vintage vehicle, you're driving it in the summer only. Maybe it's every couple of years when you're servicing, they kind of take it apart and clean them up. But I just honestly don't recall the service interval that would have been.
Okay. Nick, I know we have a lot of classic car lovers and classic car owners who listen to this show. And so you mentioned, you know, when you have a vintage vehicle, not letting it just sit undriven for too long. Like, how often should you be taking it out?
Well, you know, it depends on the vehicle and your needs. You know, a lot of these classic car guys go to a lot of car shows. And so their cars, you know, they're getting it all cleaned up and tuned up and washed up and get ready to display it and be proud of their life's work. But if it's one of those things where it's a car that I got from my parent or my uncle and it's been sitting in my garage all summer, you know, it's going to be warm out today, but this morning's not so bad. This is the type of day you go out and take it for a spin, maybe run to get coffee or groceries. You know, I'd like to see those vehicles with weather permitting, obviously, you know, a couple times a month at a minimum would be great, because like we've talked in the past, you know, letting that exercise, letting that exhaust breathe, let those brakes warm up, let that steering suspension kind of stretch its legs a little bit. It's really important to the longevity of a car, those components staying lubricated and clean and operational. And if you have a classic car, you should enjoy it, right? It's a beautiful day and go for a beautiful ride.
Yep, perfect day for it. 725 on CCO. If you have a question about your car or a car issue, let's have Nick see if he can help you. 651-461-9226. You can either call us on that number or text us. And we do have another texter on the line here, Nick. Let's see. Can you explain how a hybrid engine works? When does the battery kick in and when is gas used? I was told that the battery kicks in the first 30 miles or minutes and thereafter it uses gas. Are all hybrids similar? And they are specifically talking about a Hyundai. What do you think?
Well, I guess in concept they're similar. I guess the best way to answer it is it depends on the charge level of the battery. You know, there's regenerative braking, which means that we're slowing down. It's charging the battery. It's trying to find ways to keep the battery charged. Now, usually under a heavier acceleration, a lot of times the combustion engine will kick in. We're going along a lot of times at a sustained speed. The hybrid or electric motor is kind of maintaining that. But it's going to depend on your drive cycles. If you're a lot more of an in-town driver, you know, last week I think we were talking about different types of hybrids. in like a plug-in hybrid, where the plug-in hybrid, typically that short charge, that, you know, 6 or 8 mile charge you get on the overnight plug-in is, you know, the first few miles of your drive. Depending if you've hit the highway, if you're in town, it's going to manage it a little bit differently. But the car's designed to keep that battery charged. So if it sees an issue where that battery's not up to capacity, it's going to switch over. It's going to utilize the combustion engine more so to keep that going. And then, like I said, situations where cruising down the highway, headed to the cabin, you might find that it's using the electric system a lot more.
All right. Next texter. I have a 2016 Ford Edge that just turned 100,000 miles. I'm going to have the powertrain fluids changed out. The shop is recommending a transmission flush. Most online opinions say a drain and fill is sufficient. What is your opinion?
Well, I think they're both fine. I think if it has not been done and you're at 100,000 miles, maybe the flush might be a little more thorough. The difference of the two services are with the drain and fill, it's just that. You pull the drain plug, whatever fluid is in that area is going to drain out. We put the plug back in, you go to the fill plug, and usually it's like a 5 or 4 quart service. Now, a lot of times the capacity of a transmission is 10 or 12 quarts. So when you do a flush, you're exchanging all of the fluid out of the system. Now, if you go back to your service manual or maintenance manual, it's going to say a certain interval to do a drain and fill possibly. That might be maybe 40, 50, 60,000 miles. So you would have done two of those at this point. And I think refreshing the fluid on a regular basis with a drain and fill is just fine. I also think if you waited for a longer period of time, 100,000, 120,000 miles, and if the flush is recommended, because it's a more thorough job, you're getting all the fluid and all the debris out of the system. So that at the higher mileage might be a better service.
All right. Very good. Thanks for the advice, Nick. It is 728 on WCCO. You're listening to Car Care with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. If you have a question for Nick, the number to text or call is 651-461-9226. Coming up, we have a question about a coolant overflow container on a 2018 Jeep Wrangler. Those questions and more are coming up after the break. And good morning. It is 7:33 on WCCO Radio. My name is Laura Oakes, and we are in the middle of Car Talk with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, taking your car-related questions either by text or by phone. The number is the same, 651-461-9226. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Nick, we have a texter who says they have a 2018 Jeep Wrangler JL 3.6. The coolant overflow container had to be replaced. Now I need to replace the coolant, but when I open the radiator petcock, nothing drains out. What's going on?
Well, that doesn't seem right. Try removing the overflow cap with the radiator petcock open. Thinking maybe there's a little bit of a vacuum there it's created, and having the one drain open at the bottom and the one source at the top open might allow the air to work its way in, allow that coolant to work its way out. Just keep in mind when you drain the radiator, you may not be getting all the coolant out of the engine and the heater core and those hoses, but a vast majority of it makes you collect it and save it, recycle it. And then when you refill it, you know, look online, find the procedure for bleeding it out. The hardest thing people have, and what I mean by that is you get an air pocket somewhere, and that air pocket can create a blockage, we'll call it, from the coolant working its way through. So therefore, come winter months, we don't have very good heat. Or in the summer months, the car seems to be running hotter than it should. It's because you get a pocket of air in there kind of preventing that coolant from circulating. So make sure you look online or find a resource to follow the procedure to bleed all the air out of the system. There's a series of steps possibly with running the vehicle. There might be a check valve that you can open to let some air out. So just do a little research before you get that far into it and follow that procedure. And with a little patience, you have some good success and hopefully have a good running vehicle.
Yeah, for sure. 735 on CCO. We have a caller on the line, Nick. Joe, what's your question for Nick Stoffel?
I have a 2017 Honda Accord. And it has an electronic key that allows you to lock and unlock the door and open the trunk and so on. And I took it into the dealer because the key was no longer working. And he told me that the electronics were getting worn out because of the age of the vehicle and the key. and he said it would cost about $400 to get a replacement for it, which seems kind of high for, you know, what's essentially a tiny radio transmitter and a battery. Any thoughts on whether that's a reasonable price for a replacement for that key?
Well, there's a couple thoughts that I have is, you know, if I had a second, if, you know, when you get the vehicle, a lot of times they come with two keys or two fobs. If you have the second one, is it working? Replacing the battery in the first one, obviously, you know, something might have happened. It might have gotten wet at some point in time in the history, and it could have done some corrosion, some damage. You know, I know those fobs can be very expensive. A lot of times, a lot of the cost, if you look at the breakdown, might be to do with programming or initializing it to get it made it up to your vehicle. Obviously, there's a security process there, so that might have some added cost. There are some aftermarket ones that you can get. I would caution there because you can save some money, but you might not have the same quality or durability. So if you're getting two new keys, they're getting programmed, $400 is a lot of money, but you know that might be the cost of doing business. I would go back, though. I would try a battery. I would see if I have a second key, see if those items can work or if there's a workaround there to save yourself a little time and money.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Nick, we have another caller on the line. Nancy, what's your question?
On Friday, my car, when I was driving it, it started whistling. And if I stepped on the brake, like at a stoplight, then it would quit when I'd start out again, and then it would start up again. Is that I had the oil changed, and I've had my tires rotated and balanced. It's a 2011 Rogue. I don't know what it was. It hasn't happened again, but what caused that, or is it an issue?
Well, here's what I'd like to say. When people have like that one-off situation, you know, said Friday was doing this, it hasn't happened since. For the best of your ability, try to remember, you mentioned some good keys here. You know, I applied the brakes or stopped the vehicle, it stopped. When I accelerated, it happened again. Make those notes, the conditions, the car was warm, it was hot out. And then, you know, you don't notice it. And then all of a sudden, a couple weeks later, something happens similar again. Compare those notes. Therefore, you've had maybe a multiple situations where you've experienced this. You can call your shop or your mechanic and say, here's what happened. Here's the details of it, because that really helps them try to narrow it down. You get the vehicle into them. They can try to do the same drive cycle so then they can experience it. If they can hear it, they likely can fix it. Now, a whistling noise is a lot of times, if it's whistling itself, it's air, right? As if we whistle ourselves, we're blowing through our mouths and creating a whistling sound. So something to do with the air intake, something with air working its way through the vehicle can make a whistling noise. Not uncommon. You know, there could be a blockage or something might have shifted or moved. So that isn't necessarily a big deal. But please do pay attention to the noise. If you notice it at certain speeds or certain conditions, that's very good information for your mechanic to get to the bottom of things. So please write that down. Make note if it happens again. Make the phone call and see where you end up from there.
Thanks for the call, Nancy. Nick, back to the text line. I would like to hear about what the cost is for having a problem diagnosed. Is it charged by the hour? And is the diagnostic charge deducted from a repair when it is done?
You know, this is a hot button for me. You know, we go to the doctor and they run some tests and they say, okay, we don't know what's wrong. We got to run some more tests. And you're thinking, well, do I still pay for the test that didn't give me the answer? Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody says, well, you have health insurance. It'll cover it. Don't worry about it. Well, in our particular business, it feels like we get one shot at this. And here's what I mean by it is, when people ask, is the cost of the diagnosis deducted if I do the repair? What I would say is individual testing is based on time. That time costs something, that the technician, the knowledge, information, the, you know, all that costs something. Now, if we're disassembling something in the process and that same disassembly has to happen.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do the repair, you're not being charged twice. But if they're different processes, there's different charges. So it's based on time. We're not going to double dip you. That's dishonest. I'm not going to do that. But to have the know-how, the tooling, the equipment, to do the test and figure out what's going on, does cost something. You know, people have this notion that, you know, you just plug it in, it tells you what's wrong with the car. That's not factual. What's factual is we plug our scan tool, our computer into the vehicle. It gives us data. It gives you a code. It can give you a readings of voltages, temperatures, pressures, all kinds of things. You got to take that data, process it, critical thinking. Okay, if this is the cause and effect, what do I need to check? What do I need to do? And in that time, that half hour, 1 hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, is just that. And then once you get done doing your testing and confirming, you've proven the faulty component, the faulty situation, you have a remedy to fix it. And like I mentioned before, if we're taking something apart as a process of proving it out, we're not going to charge you a second time to do something we've already done. However, you run these tests and you find you need to do this repair, which involves removing or replacing something, that's a different process and a different charge. So hopefully I explained that easy enough, but it's one of those things where I don't think we always see the value in the research to figure out what's going on with the car, because it does cost something. I can promise you one thing, I can guarantee this, you spend a little extra money properly diagnosing the vehicle versus doing what we call throwing parts at it, will save you a tremendous amount of money in the long run. If you just throw parts at it, 2, 3, 4 repairs are much more costly than one repair with a little extra time figuring out what's going on.
For sure. Thank you for that. Thanks, Nancy. And thank you, Nick. Car Care with Nick Stauffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul here on WCCO Radio. Nick, where can people find you if they have a problem and want to have it diagnosed or at least want to hire you for some sort of service?
Well, not even that. If you just have a question, we've for years and years with Danny, we'd always say, we're just here to give you advice. You know, I don't expect anybody to drive across town. We have listeners all across the state. But if you're like, I just don't know what to say, what to do, feel free to call us, ask the question. We'll give you the advice. You take that to your mechanic, your shop, and hopefully you'll get the solution you need. To reach us, you can call us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand Avenue, which is the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. If you need more information, you can check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good. Thank you for all of the great advice, Nick. We appreciate it. See you next week.
Yep. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. It is 7:42 on WCCO Radio. I'm Laura Oakes. We are just moments away from our weekly wine chat with Ted Farrell from Haskell's. If you have any questions for Ted, we also have an email where you can send in any kind of question. And that email is winechat@wccoradio.com, winechat@wccoradio.com, or of course the text line is always open, or the phone, 651-461-9226. We'll be back with Ted Farrell in just a moment.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.